Water Committee on this Tuesday, April 29th. We are at a point of getting close to completing much of our agenda for the year. And to start with, we're going to open or we're going to open a work session for possible reconsideration of House Bill 3534. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and reconsideration of House Bill 3534A be taken up immediately. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Do you need a motion?
Yes. The chair requests a motion on House Bill 3534. The chair opens a work session on House Bill 3534A. And a request a motion on House Bill 3534 to do pass as amended and to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3534 with a do pass recommendation be referred to the Ways and Means Committee as amended.
Representative Dingfelder moves House Bill 3534 as amended with a do pass recommendation be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative
Cruz.
Krupp excused. Cruz excused.
Representative Jensen.
Aye. Having received the majority vote, House Bill 3534A, as amended, will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation. And with that completed, we will then open a work session on House Bill 2138. And Mr. Tess, would you please enlighten us as to where we're at and how we got here?
I don't think I got a copy of the amendments, but okay.
House Bill 2138, for the purposes of the Oregon Plan, defines the term recovery. After very, very hard work by the chair, we have 2138-4 amendments, which have been, we think, agreed to by all parties, basically adjusting the many definitions in the bill to cover everybody's concern. These amendments just showed up on our desk this morning, so maybe the chair would want to comment a little further or have somebody testify in some way as an invited person.
Mr. Bowles, please. I'm looking all over the room here. If you would, Ed Bowles with the director of the Fish Department of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Has been actively involved in working with us and others on this, on these amendments. So if you could help us out just a little bit, Ed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
You have a copy of just the amendments.
I just received the amendments for 2138 and 2606, and it was just in the process of reviewing those. From my perspective right now, I have not seen anything that is inconsistent with our prior testimony and would support the amendments as stated.
Okay. Are there any questions from Mr. Bowles? Jim Meyer, would you hang on, Ed? Just in light of the fact that Mr. Myron from the governor's office formerly with one of those groups that usually remain anonymous when they're in front of our committee, has worked very hard with us and generally been very influential in where we're at on these amendments. And if you have any comments or can answer any questions that committee members might have, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Jim Meyer with the Governor's Office, and I just want to say that I concur with Mr. Bowles' support of the Dash 4 amendments to this bill. This has received a lot of work over the last, actually the last 2 years since the adjournment of the last session. So it's a good bill, and we're hopeful that it'll pass.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Meyer? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Appreciate very much your. Anyone like to comment or on the amendments or on the bill itself? As was stated, this bill has gone through a variety of steps to get us to where we're at today, and in fact has taken on a life a little larger than the original intended life when 2 years ago we passed a bill to set up a task force that Representative Dinkfelder and myself and Senator Messerly sat on as ex officio members to look at the definition of recovery. Our reason for the task force was because of a report from the IMST, that's the independent multidisciplinary science team, and I always fumble with that, so they're the group that was created, the group of scientists that were created under the Oregon Plan to provide the scientific information and, if you wish, oversight, I guess by kind of a latent effect of them, at least as oversight, to the legislature about the implementation of the Oregon Plan. And one of their statements that caught our attention 2 years ago was that it was essential that we have a definition of recovery, and that was what we set out then to do. The task force met, as you've heard a number of times, I think for 9 different occasions. The chair of the task force, Bob Jacobson, in fact met with small groups in the task force many times during the course of the interim, and we had this bill before us, you will recall, back before and earlier in the session we passed it out. We were had it ready to go to the floor, and the day that it was to be heard on the floor, I moved it back to committee because we had some concerns in some of the industry about what we were doing. We brought it back to committee and began then the process of working with the industry to ensure that we were fixing the concerns that they had, while at the same time remaining true to the integrity, I guess, of the initial concept of recovery. As we worked with the industry, we found that they were generally very much in concurrence with what we did, and the basic definition of recovery was not changed from what we started out with. However, as we went from there, it became apparent in discussions we had with Mr. Bob Lahn, who is the new director, the Western Region Director of National Marine Fishery Service, or NOAA Fisheries, I guess, as they are now called, It became obvious that there were things that we might do with this bill that go beyond what the simple definition of recovery. And that is the consequence why it's taken so long for it to get back here in the attempt to work and do that and add some language that will provide us with maybe a little more ability as we come in contact with the federal agencies to work for or to get them to agree to some incidental take permits to allow us in the state of Oregon to move ahead with our economic development and as well as recovery of the species. So a number of the whereases that you see at the beginning of this are statements that are being really made hopefully to address issues and concerns of the federal agencies. And then sections 7 and 8 of the amendments that you have, not section 7, 8, sub 7 and sub 8, sub 8, are statements hopefully that will also do that. So with that discussion, if there are no other questions.
Mr. Chair,
please.
You'd like a motion?
I would.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -4 amendments to House Bill 2138.
Representative Dingfelder moves the adoption of the -4 amendments to House Bill 2138. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Dingfelder.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2138 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Dingfelder moves House Bill 2138 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any questions?
I would just like to thank the chair for his hard work on this bill, and I know that you've spent a lot of time and effort to make sure that all of the parties involved are comfortable with this, with these amendments, and I really appreciate your leadership, having worked for a year and a half to 2 years with you on this advisory committee, and I think this is a very positive move, and I'm very happy that all of the parties are in agreement now on this version.
Thank you, Representative, and the chair would like to thank Representative Dingfelder for her hard work on the task force and for hard work since the task force, with continuing to hound the chair a little bit from time to time, as she is supposed to do, about where the bill was at and what the changes are, and to make sure that she was generally kept in the loop. I'd also like to thank the governor's office for the support that we have received from them with Jim Myron and the state agencies. We could go on with thanks and appreciation of the state agencies, but special consideration should be given, I think, to the Department of Fish and Wildlife as they've worked with us on this. And I think special consideration maybe should be given to the IMST, since during our task force days, IMST, Stan Gregory in particular, was there at every meeting that we had and continued to provide us with some guidance as far as the scientific components that we might have otherwise let slip by. So, and when you start, you know, these accolades or thanks, I guess it's sometimes you run the risk, you always run the risk of leaving somebody out, and it's certainly not our intention to do that, because a lot of people worked very hard to try to get where we are here, where we are. Also like to thank the industries that brought some things to our attention. I think those were issues that were worthwhile considering. I think we have something better today than we would have had they not caused us some heartburn and questioned what we were doing. So our appreciation to them and all of the people from the industries for their work they've done. One final point that I would like to make. that it's important as you look at this particular piece of legislation to recognize that no single part of this is the Oregon Plan. The Oregon Plan is a body of statute that appear in the Chapter 541 and on, and does not, and this does not become the Oregon Plan. It only becomes a part of the Oregon Plan, and it does not alter in any way the aim and objectives of the Oregon Plan. The Oregon Plan for Recovery of Species and restoration of habitat is still the dominating philosophy and approach, I think, that we have and should have in the state of Oregon. So with that, I'll be quiet so we can get through our agenda today and let the clerk call the roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse me.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Chair
Jensen. Aye. House Bill 2138, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The chair will carry the bill. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2138 and open the work session on 2605. And could I ask, yes, Mr. Myron, if he would come up on 2605.
Go ahead, 2606.
Excuse me, 2606. My apologies. Go ahead.
House Bill 2606 defines the terms for purposes of salmon and trout enhancement program, specifies the goal of program to achieve recovery. This bill is somewhat married to the previous bill to make sure the definitions and the information in the two are the same. There are amendments. They're the dash fives you have in front of you, and I expect that Mr. Myron will discuss those to some extent.
Good morning, Jim. This, you know, was in your earlier life, as we've indicated, a thought that you brought to me and asked for, and I wanted to ask for a signature to get it into LC to get it filed. I wondered if you would be kind enough to give us just a real quick history or background or what the intention is that you had on that.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, and again, for the record, I'm Jim Myron with the Governor's Office, almost at Oregon Trout.
Oh, mercy.
I'm going to do that one of these days. The issue at hand here is that we were attempting when this issue first came up is to try and make the Salmon Trout Enhancement Program enabling statutes consistent with the goals in the Oregon Plan and with recovery of species. So that's what these amendments do. Primarily, it changes the goal of the STEP program to the recovery of species. The existing statutes say something about restoration to historic levels or something of that nature, and that's really an inconsistent goal and an unachievable goal. So this amendment to this bill changes that and makes it consistent with the Oregon Plan. Ed, would you mind coming up here and joining me for this one issue? Ed Bowles from ODFW mentioned an additional change that he thought was going to occur on page 3 that maybe if it's deemed necessary we can work on over on the Senate side.
What is the change, Ed, that I missed?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator. Actually, the dash 5 are acceptable to the department as they stand. I would mention that there is one statement under Section 3, Subsection 1, where it talks about proposal for a project to assist in the recovery or sustainability of native stocks. I had earlier recommended that wording be for a project consistent with the recovery or sustainability of of native stocks, which is a subtle nuance, but certainly not one that should impede these Dash 5 amendments from moving forward.
Read your proposal again to me.
The full sentence would be, any citizen or group of citizens may submit to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission a proposal for a project consistent with the recovery or sustainability of native stocks to be implemented, and then on.
So you're scratching the words to assist in and inserting the words consistent with.
That is correct.
In their place. Okay.
But as I mentioned, Chair, this is not a fundamental flaw from our agency's standpoint whatsoever. But that is a recommendation we had made earlier.
The Chair is going to request a conceptual amendment be made to do that, so I'd like to make sure that the committee is on the line that we're dealing with. That's line one on the top of page three, where we will delete to assist in, or to delete to assist, in, and replace it with consistent with. Is that correct, Ed?
That's correct, Chair.
Would anybody be kind enough to give the Chair a motion to that effect?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei moves that we conceptually amend the amendment, the Dash 5 amendment, to strike the words to assist in section 3, sub 1, the first sentence, and replace the words to assist in with the words consistent with, so that it would read, any citizen or group of citizens may submit to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission a proposal for a project consistent with the recovery or sustainability of native stocks to be implemented under the Salmon and Trout Enhancement Program, etc. Is there discussion on the motion to conceptually amend? Questions on it? Would you call a roll on the conceptual amendment?
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. So the Dash 5s have been conceptually amended then with that language.
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I am ready for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2606.
Representative Tomei moves the Dash 5 amendments as conceptually amended to House Bill 2606. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2606 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2606 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just would like to thank Jim Myron and also Les Haugelson from Native Fish Society, who spent quite a bit of time working on the amendments, in addition to Ed Bowles. So once again, thank everybody who spent many hours working through the amendments.
Thank you, Representative. We appreciate that. And we appreciate Jim Myron's first bringing this to our attention early in the process, so we did have a chance to begin work on it early. Would otherwise have been through had we not been working on the previous bill to get it passed. Would call a roll in, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse me.
Representative Schaumburg.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelter.
Aye.
Representative Crupp.
Aye.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. House Bill 2606, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Dingfelter, I believe, has volunteered to carry this bill.
My hand went up very quickly there, sir. Sure. I'd be honored.
Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2606 and open the work session on House Bill 2887. Adds a definition of point and non-point source for purposes of water pollution.
This is a reconsideration.
Pardon me?
I'll be right back.
Oh, fine.
2887, as the chair said, adds a definition of non-point source to the state statute. There was some concerns that the verbiage or the definition was not exactly appropriate. It was called back from the floor. It was researched carefully. It was found that the definition was appropriate and right. And now it's up to the committee to decide if they want to send it back to the floor.
I see able counsel in the back of the has come down to join us. I wondered if he was here for this bill or for 3220. Is there any discussion on this? All we're doing is sending it back to the floor as written. Okay. I would accept a motion to repass.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei moves to repass House Bill 2887 and send it as amended and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there questions on this or concern? Would you call a roll, please?
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse
me. Representative Schaumburg.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelter.
Aye.
Representative Crupp.
Excuse
me. Chair Jensen.
Aye, and let the record show that we are voting on 2887A. In case we didn't have that on the record. 2887A then is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And who was carrying this before, Pete?
It was sent to the consent calendar.
It was on the consent calendar, okay. Chair would accept a motion.
I move that House Bill 2887 be moved to the consent calendar.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2887A be placed on the consent calendar. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. With that, we will close the work session on 2887A and open a work session on House Bill 3519. Mr. Kett.
He's right outside the door. There he is. Come in.
Would you try to find the representative?
House Bill 3519. Requires Director of Division of State and Lands to require complaints regarding removal of affiliative activities within waters of states to be in writing. Requires investigation of complaint to determine if complaint is groundless or made for purpose of harassment. Allows Director to seek penalties for complaints that are groundless or made for purpose of harassment. Directs the Division of State and Lands to report to the Legislative Review Agency on damages awarded against the Division and numbers of employees. House Bill 3519 has become a little more complex than that original reading. We have two sets of amendments that may be topic of discussion this morning if the committee chair chooses to do so. We have a set of 10 amendments that amend the original bill related to complaints. And there is also a dash 9 amendments, which are, here's the history, the remainder of House Bill 2431, which we passed out earlier. In the original committee that this was heard in, a work group was set up to look at certain portions of 2431 and develop some amendments to that bill, and it was decided to put that into, potentially put this into House Bill 3519. Those amendments are the dash 9s, and those again will be discussed at the request of the chair chooses to do so. That's the situation with this bill. I suspect there will be several people that may want to make comments on the dash 10s and the dash 9s. And I gave you that slight summary yesterday. I gave you some history on the bill, and that should help with what I just mentioned if you didn't understand it.
Did we have any kind of a sign-up sheet of people who wanted to?
Mr. Chair, we didn't do that. If you'd like, we could do that real quickly, or we have several that have asked.
I'd like to have that as a sign-up sheet there. And while people are doing that, if we can, we're going to recess momentarily here the work session on 3519. And he just walked out of the room. we'll remove the recess, and I see Representative Doyle is...
to testify on this bill. It's kind of an interesting process we've been through on looking at wetlands mitigation. This bill actually originated in the Land Use and Environment Committee, of which I am a member, and we had identified some key issues, I think, where there was some opportunity to improve the current statutes relating to wetland mitigation. There was some differences of opinion on how to achieve that, and so the chair of the Environment and Land Use Committee appointed me to kind of head up a work group that brought the Division of State Lands, some different engineers and consultants, and wetlands mitigation bankers together just to see what could be hashed out. And this is really my first experience with wetland mitigation issues, and it was really quite an education for me to see just the current status of the law, and just where those who are involved in this issue on a daily basis are impacted just by the current statutes. And so, probably the most impressive part of this work group was seeing these consultants, the wetland mitigation bankers, and DSL come together. They just put in a huge number of hours, and they can testify the exact amount, but I know we've been working on this for over probably six weeks now, 8 weeks now, and they're they were meeting 2-3 times a week, a couple hours, sometimes 4 hours at a time, and I must compliment the DSL folks. I mean, they could have very easily stonewalled this. They could have just said we're not going to move, but instead they were very cooperative. They saw issues that needed to be rectified, and it was really that combined effort. I mean, it wasn't just the private business folks saying, here's what makes life easier for us, but it's DSL saying, we've seen these kind of issues, some things we could fix by rule, but if we makes it a better process by putting it in statute, then we're agreeable to that too. And I think that's the product that you have before you today. It's a definitely a combined effort, and I thought just an exemplary effort by both the department and the private sector coming together to try to solve some specific issues. So with that as an introduction, I mean, I would leave it to those in the work group to explain it further to you, but I commend their work, and I commend it to you, and hope that it can pass out to the floor.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions for Representative Doyle?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dan, good to see you. If I may, Mr. Chair, there's a couple of emails flying around about the Dash 9 amendments. And they do raise some red flags in terms of language added in here regarding other interested parties that may open the door for third-party intervention. There's an allegation that, in essence, if this amendment is adopted as it's written, that it may, in fact, overrule the Supreme Court ruling in 1996. Can you shed some light on that, Dan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, I'm afraid I cannot.
Okay. And I
guess I would leave it to those maybe who might be testifying on the amendments later that might be able to respond to that. I apologize.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I would say I appreciate Representative Doyle's hard work. He has put a lot of time in on this project, and I appreciate that dedication to that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I, too, appreciate the work that has gone into this, Representative, and your kind of constant vigilance over the bill, without which it would never have gotten here, I'm sure. So we do appreciate your hard work, and with that, thank you for taking the time to come down and explain a little bit to us.
Thank you.
We have Jeff. Go first. Okay. I want to momentarily recess the work session on Thursday, and I want to open a work session on Senate Bill 174. We had this bill before us last meeting. We didn't pass it out. There seemed to be no objection to it. Senate seems to have found it worthwhile. Perhaps we should have amended it just to be in good taste with the process, but would you explain it, where we're at, what we've done with it?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 174 deals with reduction of penalty for minor voting violations. As the Chair indicated, we had a hearing on this bill last meeting. There was no concerns. It passed. You have the information. It passed the Senate 23 ayes with no nays already, and that's generally what the situation is. There was very little comments made.
Concern, I think, that we had at the last session as to whether or not this bill would have been more appropriately routed through judiciary, and the chair did not want to pass it out without checking with the chair of the Judiciary Committee to see whether they would want to have heard the bill. I did check with the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and he was comfortable with our moving it out. So this is the reason we have it back before us today. And what I'd like to have is a motion to move Senate Bill 174 to the floor with a DeBass recommendation.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 174 to the floor with a DuPass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
174, that's... You said 174, right?
I said Senate Bill 174. If I didn't, that's what I said. Okay. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Excuse me.
Representative Shopler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Ingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Crum.
Excuse.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. Senate Bill 174 is passed. It goes to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. I'd entertain a motion for consent calendar.
So moved.
Representative Tomei, you sure you don't want to carry it? Okay. Representative Tomei moves to put Senate Bill 174 on the consent calendar. Is there any objections? Representative Krupp, we're voting to put Senate Bill 174 on the consent calendar. If it's,
I approve of that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If there are no objections, so ordered. Representative Krupp, would you like to vote on that bill, or is it?
I would.
Thank you. Representative Krupp would like to request that we suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing him to vote on Senate Bill 174. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Krupp, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Krupp votes aye. Thank you. With that, we close the work session on Senate Bill 174. And thank the department, though we didn't call on them, for being here this morning, and appreciate their time. With that, then, we will go back to our work session, reopen the work session on House Bill 3519 that we were on. And I see we have Division of State Lands here apparently to testify on the Dash 10 amendments. Jeanette Holman, do you have other than the Dash 10 amendments that you wishing to testify on, or is that it? Pardon me?
She's just doing 10. Johnson Lane.
Would we take a, let's take a look at the Dash 10 amendments first then, since it is my understanding they're shorter, though I don't think I have a copy of them.
I read them.
Thank you, Jeanette. Would you explain your support of the Dash 10 amendments, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeanette Holman. I'm the Assistant Director for Administration and Finance at the Division of State Lands. House Bill 3519-10 amendments address a problem that we saw and testified about on the first day there was a public hearing on this bill. At that time, there was language in the bill and that required us to file written information about a complaint and allowed the director to refuse to hear or respond to a complaint if there was a finding that it was groundless or for the purpose of harassment. Our concern at that time was that there were no sideboards or guidelines about how the director was to make that determination. The language in the Dash 10 amendments, beginning at line 4 on page 1 and going through line 8 on page 2, are similar to the original language in the bill. This language is taken pretty much from the Department of Agriculture CAFL complaint process, which has withstood approval by the US EPA in their assumption of that program, which was one of the concerns we had, that we didn't want to do anything that might prevent us from in the future assuming the 404 program. We have added language on page 2, lines through 2 through 8, that does direct the division as to some of the things they consider in making this determination of harassment or the groundless complaint. This language, again, is taken from the Department of Agriculture rules that implement their complaint procedure. Section 3 and 4 were originally in the Dash 1 amendments and changed the kind of reporting that the division has to do. We had no concerns with that in the original set of Dash 1 amendments. And that's what these do.
So I am to conclude that the department concurs with the Dash 10 amendments as written now.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of quick questions.
Please.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeanette.
Same thing, Kelly.
Regarding Section 4, I have two questions on the reporting requirement. It actually repeals it in January 2008. First of all, is that similar? Is there a similar reporting requirement, do you know, in the Department of Agriculture?
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, I don't believe there is. I think that's just unique to the Division of State Lands.
Because I was curious about, follow up here,
about
why you put in to repeal it. I don't know. I was assuming maybe it was consistent with what was in ODA's statutes under their CAFA complaints.
Mr. Section. Representative Jensen, Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, I am not aware of whether there was a reporting provision with the CAFO. The reason that this makes sense to me is that we have never tracked real specifically the kinds of complaints that we've gotten. And one of the issues, if you recall from that first hearing, was do we really have a problem? And this would help us identify whether we do in fact have a problem.
Thank you.
I think, having listened to the CAFO arguments or debates or discussions 2 years ago, that the Department of Ag does have or has tracked their complaints. I don't know, is Department of Ag here? I don't think they should be. No.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? I believe I also have Mark, is it Lucia? Luca? From Representative's office, who's been working with you. Come and tell us why Representative Anderson is interested in the Dash 10 amendments, or what your, you know, take on this is. Good morning, Mark.
Morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Luca. I am the legislative assistant for Representative Gordon Anderson, and I'm also the person that requested what this bill was. And what the bill was an attempt to clamp down on frivolous complaints made from one neighbor to another. And we're hoping that with the Dash 10 amendments that this would procedure would continue to be looked at and perhaps to be corrected. There is a perceived problem, at least, among landowners that if they're going to try to build a road or a pond or something on their property that they may have complete legal authority to do, that perhaps if they're in some sort of a Hatfield and McCoy fight with their neighbors, that they may sic a state agency on them as a retaliatory move. And there's no, currently there's no recourse that we could see that would allow the person then to know that it was their neighbor, to know that where this complaint came from, and to maybe take some sort of action against it. So we're hoping that by empowering the division to ignore complaints from such people that perhaps the problem can be corrected.
Are there any questions for Mike? I see the Representative Anderson has joined us. Would you please come?
He brought his army with him, though.
What?
He brought his army with him.
I know. I mean, go ahead. Talk about imposing here.
I don't feel intimidated, don't worry.
Excuse me, Representative. We have a group of distinguished visitors with us this morning. Can one of you help me with where you're from? And Westland Middle School in Corvallis.
That's nothing to do with the representative, by the way. So,
all right. And
they're going to keep us on our toes.
You brought paper and pencils with you to make sure that we follow protocol and everything. Welcome. Glad to have you here in the Capitol. Glad to have you visit us in a committee meeting. We're hearing a bill this morning on wetlands and some controversial issues regarding it. We've just gotten started with this, and Representative Anderson is going to, who was the primary sponsor of the bill, is going to explain a little bit about his interest in the bill. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Sorry for...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm Gordon Anderson, representative from District 3, Josephine County. We basically, as a result of some concerns on several constituents in our area, felt that it'd be good to, and I don't know how far into this you've been, I was watching for a little while, but I bring this bill to you because we felt that it would be good for accountability to, for constituents or folks who are involved with programs that DSL would oversee, to be able to follow the complaint process through which DSL moves. We would like, as a result of the Dash 10 amendments, to just do a very simple outlining of the complaints that do come in order to get those people who make a complaint on paper so that they're not just hiding behind a tree and making a frivolous complaint. And then we would like, if possible, to have a written record of those complaints by the department so we have a pretty good track of who's complaining and what complaints they are and how they're dealt with over a period of time. We got together with the department, and they basically wrote these amendments in Dash 10. And while we have moderated some of the things that were in there, there was at one point a fine for those people who exceeded the complaint process. There was a possibility of people being disciplined. We took that all out. But basically, we are asking that there be accountability and that the department make a record to be shared with the committee over I think each biennium, and that way we'll be able to follow the effectiveness of DSL in this situation. I think that probably outlines pretty much what the bill asks, and I'd be open to any questions.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Representative Anderson, I really understand the original intent of the bill. This doesn't look anything like it. And
on the Dash 9.
Is that Dash 9 or 8, 7, 8, 9?
The Dash 10s.
The Dash 10 basically goes back to the simple form.
Ah, okay.
This is the reporting requirement.
Okay, I was trying to figure out how all this mitigation banking fit into the...
Okay. We were trying to save paper and make this a very economical process.
Okay, I'm going to quit reading the Dash 9s in, Mr. Chair, and take a look at the Dash 10s. So.
And that's our recommendation, Representative Cruz.
While you're at it, in your reading, Representative, the Chair would entertain a motion to move the Dash 10s into the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'm
not going to move the Dash 9s, I'll tell you that.
I move the Dash 10 amendments to House Bill 3519.
Representative Cruz moves the dash.
Representative
Dingfelder.
Well, you know, I can understand you.
You guys have had this thing. Representative Dingfelder moves the dash 10 amendments into House Bill 3519.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, I do have a question. Thank
yes.
you. Now, does this mean with certainty that the Dash 9 amendments are not moving forward?
No. We haven't discussed the Dash 9s at this
point. Okay.
We're moving the Dash 10s and getting this out of the road before we get to the Dash 9s.
Thank you.
Sir, I was just glad I was reading the wrong amendment.
You're glad you
were? Well, yeah, so I would have hated to have disagreed with my good friend from Grants Pass.
Oh, that would have been disastrous, I mean. Okay, would you, well, hearing no objection, so ordered. With that, thank you very much for your time, and we will continue our discussion by taking the hearing some of the proponents of the Dash 9 amendments. And we will once again recess the work session on 3519, and the reason for the recess on this and moving to some of the other bills is it is possible that we may not complete our agenda on 3519 today, and we'd like to clear the rest of the calendar to make sure that we've got our other work done, and we will therefore open a work session on House Bill 3220. Mr. Kessler.
House Bill 3220 eliminates the 1 cubic foot per second limitation on authorized uses in scenic waterways. There's a Dash 4 amendments that basically the bill was printed slightly wrong from what it was expected to be that corrects that, that only removes the 1 cubic foot per second for flows over up to and over 500. No, only removes 1 cubic foot per second for flows over 500 cubic feet per second and limits the process only to the Deschutes River Basin. We had a hearing where we discussed this bill previously, and that's where we stand with it at the present time.
Thank you. You know, I think good discussion on that. There seemed to be a lot of concern when we looked at all of the scenic waterways of the state, so we went back to the original bill and confined the language to the Deschutes Basin, the Deschutes River that we had been talking about. Then we had the kind of basic misprint or misunderstanding with LC on the on 3220, with the Dash 3 amendments and got the wording wrong. We now have the Dash 4 amendments. Is there any discussion on this and questions that you have? I see, Brendan, are you here to tell us something or to answer questions? Okay. Hearing no questions, the chair would entertain motions.
We're moving the Dash 4, is that what we're moving, yes. Mr. Chair? I'm still unclear. I'm unclear what the Dash 4 does. I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm trying to find the original bill.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the Dash 4.
The Dash 4 amendment changes the statute that calls for the removal. Brendan.
Good morning, Chair Jensen, members of the committee, Representative Tomei. The Dash 4s, I was requested to make this new change apply only to the rivers in the Deschutes River Basin. In reading The existing statute section 398.35, the change between the dash fours and the dash threes, I think, yes, it would be a small change in the wording in subsection 8.
What page is that?
That's on page 2 of the bill.
Thank you, Chair.
The rest of it is basically the dash threes.
Are you looking for, if I may, Mr. Chair? May I continue to ask some questions? So you're on page two of the original bill.
Page two of the original bill, Representative, yes. Sub 8 would then read, the Water Resources Commission may not allow human consumption and livestock uses authorized under sub 6 of this section in the Deschutes River basins in excess of a combined cumulative total of 1%. Reading to the end of the line, that would reinstate the bracketed material on line 31 of the bill, and then it would say, for scenic waterways with an average daily flow of up to 500 cubic feet per second, or 1% of the average daily flow of scenic waterways with an average daily flow of 500 cubic feet per second or more. So then we would add in lines 3 through 6 of the dash 4.
So that would, I thought the whole idea, if I'm understanding this correctly, is to have this apply only to the Deschutes. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, that was what was requested of me, yes.
So why are you including the words scenic waterways? Doesn't that seem to imply that it might apply to other waterways?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, I'm not certain of all of the scenic waterways that are in the Deschutes River Basin. Certainly the Deschutes River is one of them. I was not certain whether there were other rivers that are in the Deschutes River Basin. So the language I used is the basin itself, not just the river.
Right. There's only one river system.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I guess. Thank you. My concern, Brendan, and how this ends up fitting in with in the book when it's written and we get the new ORSs out. I still have some concerns that we might be. Camel's nose into the tent flap sort of thing here. I guess I don't have a high level of certainty that just because we're referencing Deschutes that necessarily is going to preclude somebody from making assumptions in rural beyond that. And I guess there is no certainty of that. But that's my one concern with this, Mr. Chair, is,
Representative, first of all, it's in statute for all other scenic river waterways. So it would be impossible or illegal for the department to make a rule that would include every waterway.
Mr. Chair, in all due respect, I have seen agencies make administrative rules that went 180 degrees from what's in statute.
Well, possible, I would concur, but to do so would be in violation.
But clearly it happens.
Well,
so
the concern that we have, the issue is that if in a waterway, in a scenic waterway, we have either of two conditions being met, one is 1 cubic foot per second, or B is 1% of the flow, that no permit will be issued. The contention by some is that 1 cubic foot per second for large bodies of water is not even measurable.
Right.
As we have discussed at other times, at another time in here with one of the departments, that a cubic foot per second out of the Columbia River, the Water Resource Department specifically, would be impossible to measure.
Right.
And the department didn't know what the Columbia River water flow was, which is fine, but it is somewhere between 150,000 to 500,000 cubic feet per second.
Small range.
depending on the time of the year.
Yes. So Mr. Chair, with my concerns, I would move the Dash 4 amendment to House Bill 3220.
Representative Cruz moves a Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3220. Further discussion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3220 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 3220 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Seeing no discussion, Representative Chaffin.
Yeah. This has been a very learning process for me. And it hasn't been proven to me that we are accurately measuring how much water is in the river. Therefore, how do we know we're taking about too much or too little? And if those folks need some water and there's a drop of water in that river, I'd like to let them have some of it. But I don't think this is the way I want to do it. I would prefer, in the best of all worlds, in my world, to return to Senator Bryant's original writ legislation, and rather than doing it this way, piecemeal, revisit that, and rather than basing everything on some guesstimate that we have no idea what there's no measuring stick there, do it from a consumption perspective rather than guessing how much is in the river. But I don't think this is the way I want to do it. That's why, Mr. Chair, I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'll also be a no vote on this. A couple of reasons. One is, although this has been narrowed now to solely the Deschutes Basin, I'm still concerned. Actually, Representative Cruz already said it knows under the camel's tent, so I'm a little concerned about that and making sure that we're not going to weaken the...
It's camel's nose under the tent.
Oh, did I say that? Thank you. I knew it was some part of the body under the tent there. But I am concerned about weakening an act that was passed by the voters of the state, number one. And two, there are already provisions, my understanding, in the State Scenic Waterways Act. If the agencies do believe that there is good reason to exceed that limit by working with the other agencies that are involved, I think there's five agencies in total, that they can provide exceptions. So that's why I'll be a no.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping me with
the tenth issue. Well, I was going to speak, but I'm going to be a vote, a no vote also, Mr. Chair.
Oh, my goodness. Let's call the roll, please.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Shuffler.
No.
Representative Tomei.
No.
Representative Dingfelder.
No.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3220 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Jensen will carry the bill.
Maybe you could say goes under the camel.
Just as we'll close the work session on House Bill 3220, and then with that, let me remind the good representative from North Portland or Northeast Portland that when we talk about the voters' decisions on these things, my hope is that when we discuss, if we may discuss this time, some possibility of things like sales tax, that the representative will remember the voters.
I haven't said anything about sales tax.
Okay.
Don't look at me.
As you can see, there's a little bit of levity, hopefully, that goes with this, and sometimes that's needed for us to be able to deal with what otherwise might be some of our controversies that we have on bills or issues. So with that, I guess we've closed already the work session on House Bill 3220. And no, we're not going to hear Senate Bill 748 today because we've got too far to go on House Bill 3519. I don't think we're going to hear it because I think it's going to take the rest of the time that we have to hear the folks on House Bill 3519. So we'll go back and I think there's a group of you, if I'm correct on this, Nick Coffey and whoever it was that was working on the task force on 3519. I haven't reopened the work session on 3519, but we have now. So is Nick here?
He's getting
Nick? Do you have other members of your work group that are here that are testifying on this or want to testify on this? Or are you the sole bearer of the flag today?
I have two members of our group here, Representative Jensen, and I wanted to bring Mr. Stolen from outside and get him up here. And
Would you please do that with...
Did we say something wrong?
We don't have a quorum, but we will have momentarily. We'll reopen the work session on 3519, and we'll be discussing, I think, the Dash 10 amendments. And would you get us a quorum back?
Dash 9.
The Dash 9 amendments, excuse me.
The workforces are here.
The workforce is here, yeah. Good morning. We've got the quorum here, so would you start, please?
Representative Chairman Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Nick Coffey. About 2 months ago, I was appointed by Representative Garrard in his capacity of chairman of his committee to make amendments to the removal fill law, and the vehicle at that time was a different bill. Another set of amendments to the removal fill law had been proposed, and some of us who had been working on proposed changes to the removal fill language for a number of months took a look at this and talked, and we originally started with a different bill number, but we've ended up here today in your committee with House Bill 3519, which is a bill that we have some of us in private business have been working on pretty much continuously for the last 6 weeks. A lot of time and thought have gone into these amendments, and composition of the committee, I felt, was such that we're able to accomplish a lot in a relatively short amount of time. Our proposal would... the overall intent is to fine-tune the removal fill law and address some problems that we as consultants have seen in the administration of that law, and that we have heard from the people that we work with and how the law affects them, and in discrepancies between the removal fill law and some other laws that have been in effect but haven't been implemented for a while.
So, you know, one of the things we did was establish a committee to put wetland mitigation on a function and value or functional attributes or however you want to say it, but on the basis of what the wetland actually does and address those qualities of it on the mitigation side. That brings consistency between this law and a law that was put on the books so something like 8 or 9 years ago on efforts of Mr. Stewart. We feel that...
Mr. Coffey.
Pardon me?
Excuse me for a moment.
Sure.
First of all, let me ask you to clarify who was on this committee and what was their background or why were they on the committee, I guess?
Thank you, Chairman Jensen. Yes, the committee consisted of myself. I am a wetland consultant. Mr. Phil Scholes, sitting next to me, who is also a wetland consultant. John Lilly from Division of State Lands. Mel Stewart, a private citizen, who's had some experience with the wetland process. Dick Nowitzki, who's a wetland maker.
Dick Nowitzki?
Nowitzki.
Nowitzki. Okay. It's my understanding that Mr. Stewart was no longer participating as you reached drawing up of the Dash 9 amendments. Is that true?
Well, Mr. Stewart was participating for part of that, and then he withdrew.
Okay.
Mid-process.
Please proceed. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think I've summarized what the effort was and who was involved, as I understand it, and during the last several hours, maybe the last 12 hours or so, a number of objections have been raised to the Dash 9 amendments, and what I think in terms of process is I'm not sure if this process is going to carry over to another hearing or not, but if I would like to get together with those folks that have objections and hear what their specific objections are and try and address them so that we can move this bill. I think we ought to either do that and move the bill at a later time or move the bill and address those issues over on the Senate side before it comes back here.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
But of course, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anybody from the environmental community on this committee?
Well, no. We had Division of State Lands on this committee. Division of State Lands felt like someone from the environmental committee should have been included. We asked them to bring someone in from the environmental community, and that actually didn't happen.
Okay.
So. There's been an opportunity from, as I understand it, Mr. Lilly has taken drafts to Liz Frankel, who is the environmental community person that has been commenting on this.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And that was, 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Other questions of Mr. Coffey? Mr. Scholes.
Hello. My name is Phil Scholes. I am a wetland consultant in Portland. And, one of the things that I guess I'd like to say is that, the intention when we came forward with some proposals to modify the removal fill process was to improve it. I do probably some of the largest number of wetland fill permits of the wetland consultants out there, so I am embroiled in permitting issues virtually every day of my work. And there are lots of opportunities for some fine-tuning, and that's what we approach this process with, is not to undermine it. In fact, my livelihood is dependent on keeping the process, you know, working. I just would like to make some improvements, and that's what the committee has been working on. And so we're trying to resolve problems where small wetland projects that might only be a quarter of an acre get isolated are now be part of larger wetland mitigation banks, create opportunity to make larger wetlands, to try to remove some of the barriers that, you know, for long periods of time where there's not a lot of activity, we're shortening up some of the timelines, not to reduce public comment, but just to reduce the amount of time of just waiting for something to happen. I think if one goes through all these particular amendments, you see that there's not an intention here to loosen any kind of environmental standards. We're all we've actually tried to make sure that we put some checks and balances in here so that when we talk about creating sort of an express permitting process, that we actually encourage developers and other people that might have wetland impacts to reduce their types of impacts so that they get through the permitting process sooner, so that the net result is we fill less wetlands. You make a process where they can get through sooner, they're going to want to take the path of least resistance. And that's part of our intention with these types of things. The objections that we're getting from maybe the environmental community and other opponents haven't been very clear to us about what they don't like about it, and we are very welcome them to talk to us about what kinds of things that can be improved upon. But that's the whole intention of this bill, is to make the permitting process a little bit better, reduce a little bit of the staff time it takes for DSL to review things, which should save some money, and require the applicants to provide more information in a more succinct kind of way. Mm-hmm. And that's our intention with this. And we would hope that the committee would look at this and say, you know, either keep working with this or let's move it on and resolve some of the conflicts, you know, on the Senate side. But a lot of work has gone on here.
For the record, as far as this committee is concerned, it is not my policy, nor do I intend to ever make it my policy, to pass out half pieces of legislation for it to be finished at some other point.
Okay.
So we don't need to ride that camel.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we would love to resolve all the issues sooner than later, is I guess our point we're trying to make.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes, but before you do, let me briefly interrupt and welcome the students. And you all are from Westland Middle School. We would like to welcome you to the House Water Committee. We're currently discussing, as you have already, I'm sure, concluded, wetlands and whether or not we need to change some of the laws that deal with wetlands in the state of Oregon. So welcome. I hope it's educational and beneficial for you. I see you have a paper and all of that. I assume you're preparing a test quiz for us so that when we're through, we'll be able to find out whether we were doing our job the way we were supposed to. And with that, Representative Dingfelder, your question.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I have a couple questions for you. One is, and I've discussed, I have a lot of colleagues that work in the wetland field. I used to work for a big consulting firm, C.H. Schoenhelm. I'm sure you've heard of it. And I am not by any means a wetland expert. However, I have heard quite a bit of concern from people in the field about this bill. And one question that's been asked to me, and I really don't have a good answer for it, is why this is being done through statute versus rulemaking, where there would be a broader opportunity for input. You know, with all due respect to your knowledge and experience, but there are many, many wetland scientists out in the field that would like to have input in this process that either can't be here during the day or would like to weigh in. So I was just curious as to if you could comment on why this is done through statute. And could the agency do this through rulemaking if they so wish?
Potentially. The agency did go through a rather large rulemaking process last year, and some suggestions that we made to Division of State Lands to incorporate into the rulemaking, they decided would not be appropriate, or they felt they did not have the statutory authority to do that. And so some of the changes are being proposed here are things that essentially we're providing essentially the initiative to get moving on them. We've had in our state statute for about 8 years a requirement to evaluate our wetland impacts on the basis of functional attributes, but we do not have a process to evaluate them. And so after 8 years, our feeling as consultants is, if we need to put a little incentive to this, to the Division of State Lands to move forward with that, then we've got a paragraph in the Dash 9 amendments to have that committee to get it moving along. It's essentially a requirement that we need to stop ignoring. That's part of the reason. The other things, there are some limitations on how much money Division of State Lands can spend for using their mitigation fund, and it prevents essentially bigger projects from happening. And so we're asking that that limitation be removed out of the statute. And so we're fine-tuning it from both sides. We put in some language, for example, that adjacent property owners be notified during the permitting process, and that's a standard practice, but it's not something that's actually part of this statute. And so we're trying to provide some assurances on that both sides from people that like or dislike wetland kind of permitting stuff, that what is done as a practice is actually part of the statute in some cases.
Right. Well, part of the answer is that some of the things that we're addressing are already part of the statute, and then some of the things that we're addressing our relationship to other statutes. So we have to deal with some of the stuff at a statutory level anyway.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
I think we bored our students with a really dry subject there.
I'm disappointed.
Of course, you are being blamed for that.
I know. Right?
You were the one doing the question.
I should have kept the camels, I think.
That's all I could say.
I have a series of questions and comments on this, but one in particular I'm not going to go through point by point, but one that I noticed, which was...
Representative, you have the chair's indulgence to go through point by point, so please proceed.
The first one is one of the concerns I had was changing the definitions from functions and values to functional attributes. And again, I'm not a wetland scientist expert, but the people that I work with and have worked with in the field, functions and values is sort of the term, the standard accepted term. And I was curious as to why, and I noticed throughout the entire 40-page amendment, we changed from functions and values, which my understanding has accepted meanings, and plus there are two separate ways of measuring the value of a wetland through their functions and their values. So can you maybe, since I wasn't part of the committee, share with me why we've changed all that to functional attributes, which I don't feel is as accepted a term in the field.
Sure. It's a very good question. We typically think of, when we talk about what wetlands do, we think of them as functions and values. That's sort of a common catchphrase that's been used for years. Our statute right now uses the word functional attributes as essentially the criteria or the standard that we must replace wetlands on. In other words, the statute says that wetlands are replaced on a functional attribute basis. So all we were attempting to do was make language consistent within the statute. We are just as comfortable not using the phrase functional attributes and using the phrase functions and values if that they accomplish the same thing. We're just trying to get apples to apples language throughout the statute. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really simple modification if the committee likes that.
And Mr. Chair, just to follow up on that, if I may, I was trying to understand why not change functional attributes to be consistent with functions and values, since that's a much more accepted term of practice versus functional attributes. When I talked to wetlands scientists, they couldn't give me a distinct definition for that, where functions and values seems to be much more accepted. So I guess I was curious, why change all the other references to be consistent with a term that isn't as accepted?
It was just a choice. It was nothing deliberate. Functional attributes does not mean something, in our minds, different than functions and values. And at this point, I would support revising the functional attributes to just be functions and values throughout this statute.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, one last. I'm not going to go through all of these. I can share, and I've already shared these concerns with Division of State Lands. I guess the biggest concern I have is about calling mitigation actions indirect and direct. I think it's very confusing. I mean, my understanding is we have the sequencing of avoidance, minimization, just make sure I'm reading this right, restoration, unavoidable impacts, payment. And again, the people that I talk to that work in the field said this is a standard accepted practice, and then indirect and direct, I think, has less definition to the average wetland scientist. So that would entail re-educating, retraining a lot of people out in the field, if you have any comments on that.
Yeah, the Division of State Lands actually pretty much coined the terms direct and indirect mitigation. And we used to sort of call them on-site or off-site mitigation. And when they went through their rulemaking last year, that's the terms they chose to use. And they've asked all the consultants to essentially get accustomed to that language. And they chose not to use the phrase and on-site mitigation because they were trying to give some latitude that you could do the equivalent of on-site mitigation within your neighbor's property, not just your own property, and it would still be considered the equivalent of being on-site. So it was a matter of semantics for them to choose a different word than on-site to give them some flexibility. And I think you could get another comment on that if you want from Division of State Lands, because they're here in the room also. But we're not reinventing something here. We're simply trying to make the statute be consistent with the administrative rules, because right now, when the statute says on-site mitigation, and the administrative rules say direct mitigation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will share the remainder of these with you. I don't want to be a hog. Moving on to
Representative Cruz was happy to let you proceed, but you have not.
When you're done with your camel, just let us know. And
as long as we don't move on to the latter end of the camel.
Mr. Chair, I guess, first of all, I've never been a fan of mitigation banking, period. I think it's taking the problems from someplace and farming them off on somebody else, and I think we should do things directly. But one of the things that really concerns me in here is, because we're talking about the ability to do mitigation banking for parcels that are so small they aren't viable wetlands, and I would prefer that we deal with viability on the front end. You know, a quarter acre wetland is not a viable wetland for anything, for all intents and purposes, and yet we're going to be doing banking for those sorts of things, and I don't like going down that road. I think we have reached a point in time. Huh? No, this would probably be a donkey, because it moves very slow and it's stubborn. But it's not. You know, we have danced around the issue of viable wetlands for 20 years that I've been involved, and I don't see this getting us any closer to a resolution there, and at some point I think that should be primary focus, is making that determination. I also see some things in here that might potentially inhibit local jurisdictions from weighing in on issues of viability. So, I mean, these are just some of the concerns I have.
Yeah, Representative Cruz, I agree with you. I don't think that I think the intention, it does not address viable wetlands. It doesn't, and quite deliberately so. We wanted to have a product here that had a possibility of getting the governor's signature when we were done.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I can understand that, but I've never necessarily been one to shy away from issues I think need to be addressed. Number one, Mr. Chair, now that we are on the Dash 9s, and I haven't totally read everything, I just see some red flags popping up as I read through this thing that I'm just not sure about at this point. So,
Mr. Chair, may I? And you know what? Representative Anderson's bill is about complaint process, and here we're rewriting wetland policy for the state of Oregon. It's something about this process that frustrates me. But I would like to add some agreement with Representative Cruz. This mitigation, you can build on this wetland, but you can go over there and make one. You know what? I don't agree with that. I think that's wrong. The mitigation process is it's goofy as far as I'm concerned. You can't create what Mother Nature's created. So I agree with him on that one. But this whole taking this bill and putting it in Representative Anderson's, I'm ready to move on and deal with the complaint process one myself. But that's my opinion. Thank you, sir.
I'm looking around for Mr. Lilly and.
You
got you. Well, Jim, would you care to carry the ball for the department here? I mean, I guess that's what goes with the job you have now. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Myron with the governor's office, and I apologize for John Lilly. He had to leave for a 10 o'clock meeting. So what I will try to do is do the best I can to stand in his stead. At this point, if there is additional time to take to continue to work the Dash 9 amendments, I would encourage you to do that. There's enough controversy surrounding these from various sides that they do need some more work. I think since both the environmental community and the agricultural community did not participate in the working group, I think it's essential to get some of those folks together and get their sign off on the final product. If there isn't time to do that, then the only real alternative is to do something in the interim. But we do support the Dash 10 amendments. We think that makes a good process. It doesn't create an undue burden on people to put their complaints in writing. The system has worked well over the years for the CAFO program, and so at the very least, we would encourage you to move that part of the bill.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that, and certainly one of the issues that I've been concerned with is whether or not this is too complicated an issue for us to deal with in the time elements that we have, depending on what dispensation we might get from leadership. And like my good colleague says, concern with the environmental community not being represented on the work group, I was equally concerned that the agricultural community was not represented on the work group. And as a consequence, I have no real place to go to know whether their concerns were addressed or whether they were not. Now, I know we have the cattlemen are in the audience today. I'm not sure, I haven't talked to them about, you know, what their issues are or potential issues are with this, but it would have been I get nervous, and there's nothing intended for the, you know, the people who are there, but I get nervous when interest groups draw up the legislation and the affected groups are not part of the process, sort of thing. And, you know, we really are hard-pressed as far as time right now to be able to get all of that. We may be able to do that, in which case we might be able to move the bill forward. But until I have those other assurances or talk to those other groups, I will be hard-pressed to move the bill forward. Nobody's integrity is in any way being questioned with this. It is merely that our process here is we try to hear all of the people's concerns that are involved, whether they agree with us or whether they sometimes disagree with me.
people disagree with you?
It's hard to believe.
No. I cannot imagine that.
Mr. Chair, let me just add, the governor's office is certainly interested in fine-tuning or streamlining the process if there are ways of doing that, and would encourage that discussion to move forward in whatever venue seems appropriate.
Okay. Are there other questions for the panel we have here at the present time? Let me go on then and ask Karen Tarnum. With DEQ. Also have Liz Frankel with the, if I could ask you to come up to Liz and just to try to move the process along. Karen?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, Karen Tarno from the Department of Environmental Quality. The statutes require that DSL is issuing permits that are adequately protective of water quality. And to ensure that that happens, DEQ and DSL work together very closely. We use our water quality expertise to make sure that that milepost is met. We support continuing efforts to look at ways to streamline this process. Last year, we started talking with DSL about some ways that we could do that. There are some permits that go through that already have set conditions or set approvals, so that it's pretty automatic that they are going to have the conditions they need to meet water quality standards. There's other kinds of permits that it's not as clear, and DEQ needs some time to think about those and give DSL some input. There's another set of permits of actions where the applicant needs both a permit from DSL and a permit from the Corps of Engineers. In those, DEQ is required to give a water quality certification for the Corps of Engineers permits. There's a piece of this bill that talks about the timeline for agencies to provide comments to DSL, and it, with the attempt to expedite some of those procedures. As I said, we do want to expedite those procedures, but the amendments as written have some problems with them that I've talked to the sponsors about, and we would need to fix in order to ensure that there was adequate time when we needed more time to address some of those issues.
Thank you. Questions for Karen? Thank you very much, Karen. Liz
Frankel, and today at this moment I'm speaking for myself because I have written the testimony, but I haven't had time to get it through the league process. Life is like that. I will turn in written testimony as soon as it gets through the process, signed and all. I want to say first, I agree with you, Chair Jensen, that this is as it's written right now, it is really more than just a streamlining bill. And I'm not at all sure that another 2 weeks of meeting together are going to solve this. I do think that there are permitting problems that could be expedited and solved. I think that there are a lot of issues, and you're hearing a lot of the issues that did not surface until this particular time in the life of this legislation. And rather than tell you all of the things that I'm concerned about, I would strongly support some kind of interim review of the issues as they've been raised, whether that will I mean, not everything is easily resolved just because it's got more time. But I certainly would be willing to work with a group. And I, at this point, like the ag people, I don't feel the environmentalists have had much of any input. I think I'll close with that.
Thank you very much, Liz. We certainly appreciate your testimony and your patience waiting to get up.
Thank you.
Today. Thank you. Also, I'd like to have Mel Stewart and Mark Luca, who have indicated a desire to talk on the Dash 9 amendments, and we'd like to recognize them. Are you waiting for Mel, or can you just go ahead? Are you waiting for Mel, or can you just go ahead?
I can go ahead.
Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Mark Luca. I'm a legislative assistant for Representative Anderson. However, I'm speaking today as the citizen requesting a bill, and it's not this bill in the Dash 9 amendments. What the Dash 9 amendments equate to is the unlawful removal and fill of a wetlands bill without a permit. It's been dredged and filled with things that were not intended to be in the bill, and I will leave it to Mel's expertise to tell you exactly what the effects of it will be. Suffice it to say that with all due respect to Representative Doyle and his attempts and the other committee's attempts to streamline the process and the other good intentions that they mentioned, I don't believe that this would accomplish anything good in relation to the things it would do to landowners and to business owners in the state. It's been said that this is a fine tuning. It's not a tuning. It's lighting the whole piano on fire and pushing it off of a cliff. And in terms of functional mitigation and definitions of what is a wetland and what isn't a wetland, I would suggest that these long definitions of what is and what isn't a wetland only serve to confuse the process. If we really wanted to know what a wetland is, we could have asked any of the middle schoolers that were here a few minutes ago, is that a wetland or is that not a wetland, and they would know. And I don't mean that in any sort of offense to the wetlands consultants or other scientists that work in this field. I just mean that to say that perhaps we've gone a little bit too far in ratcheting down which quarter acre is a wetland and which isn't, when in reality I think most of us know when we see storks and cranes and those types of blue herons sitting in a what would traditionally be called a marsh. We know that's a wetland, and that maybe that is too simplistic, but I think that there's another extreme, and that's where this Dash 9 amendment is going. Reducing the time periods for the process and streamlining the process is certainly a worthy goal that landowners in Josephine County and in Eastern Oregon and around the state would certainly appreciate and have been demanding for a long time. What I don't see in here is anywhere, what I see in the Dash 9 amendments is where people that are providing comments to the division have to maintain this very strict process of time periods, 90 days here and 30 days there. What I don't see is when a private citizen asks the division for information or for a permit decision, I don't see anything that says that they have to render a decision within a certain period of time. And I think that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And that maybe that needs to be written into this process the next time this committee meets and goes around. So with that, I'd be willing to take any questions that you might have, or either now or I'll wait until after Mr. Stewart is done with his testimony.
Mr. Stewart.
My name is Mel Stewart, Chair Jensen, members of the committee. Just to, in the effort to save time, I've provided a written, written presentation. I'd like to limit my comments to pretty much just a written presentation, just to save the committee time. Unless you have questions,
I appreciate the saving the committee's time, and So your written testimony is noted, and we appreciate that.
I'd like to draw the committee's attention to just one document they're provided. We have a document here from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers stating that they are currently involved in a project to help define functional values. They anticipate developing a set of guidelines to help wetlands consultants develop functional values evaluation techniques. And that process is ongoing. They anticipate it lasting at least another 6 months and taking as much as 12 months, and they were inviting anybody that wants to participate in that process, in that committee process, to step forward. So if we want to have participation in that process by which the Corps of Engineers is setting up their guidelines, this is the time to make our wishes known. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Stewart? Thank you very much. That, I think, concludes everybody who's on a list here. Is there someone else in the, that would like to speak to this bill that hasn't had an opportunity? Pro, con, indifferent?
That's all logical.
Okay. Colleagues, what I would like to do is I'd like to move the bill with -10 amendments for passage. But we will hold that bill in committee after we've moved it out until I can clarify with the Speaker whether she will give us additional time to work on this bill. It quite frankly is my opinion that the issue is A, very complicated, has been talked about and discussed before. Representative Cruz has a 20-year memory span on this, and I know that that's not the span of time that wetlands have been around, because I know it's only because of his youth that it only goes back 20 years in his history. And certainly he would have immediate recall of anything on an issue like this. And I don't mean to speak lightly of this, but it is something that has been a problem. It's been an issue. It's been around. I think it is something that we do need to address and do need to look at. But I do think that the environmental community needs to be a part of the discussions. I think the agricultural community needs to be a part of the discussions, and I think, for that matter, just the average citizen that happens to own a lot in a portion of the metropolitan area of Roseburg or some other place needs to have the opportunity to be a part of the discussion on this. So my plan, with the committee's approval, would be to move the 3519 with -10 amendments, then the -10 amendments have already been moved into 3519, to move that to the floor with a due pass recommendation, but not to drop it with the chief clerk's office until I've had a chance to clarify whether we can do more work on this bill. If we can't do more work on the bill, then it can proceed. We can find other courses of avenue to work with it. But the chair is uncomfortable about moving the -9 amendments forward today. And I sense there's not the will in the committee to move them forward today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I move House Bill 3519 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves House Bill 3519 as amended with the -10 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Are there questions? Please call the roll.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative
Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Representative
Krupp. Excuse.
Chair Jensen.
Aye. So the House Bill 3519 as amended is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We would assign Representative Anderson as the carrier of the bill, since it's his bill. but recognizing that if it comes back to committee for reconsideration to move on with the Dash 9 amendments, if the Speaker will grant us the right and privilege to do that, that the carrier of the bill may change at that point. Okay? Is there any other items? Any other items for the good of the cause? We did fairly well today. We got through everything but Senate Bill 748. That will likely be on the agenda for Thursday. And whatever other Senate bills. We have also another bill that will be back. We'll be reconsidering House Bill 2473. You'll remember this bill as the fishy bill. This is the one for private hatchery, 10% private hatchery stock. We have a fiscal of $70,000. I think it's 70 or is it 100? $70,000 that we will have to reconsider that bill and send it to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I would be interested in knowing how maintaining the status quo of a program increases the cost, and I'm hoping we will hear that.
We will
Thursday.
We will inquire into that before we move it to Ways and Means. I'm doing some inquiry into this fiscal is coming from and why, sort of thing. But as it stands now, we have to bring it back if it does have a fiscal on it, because Ways and Means doesn't like it when we and they always are doing something that we want to have them listen to us on.
Sometimes they're doing things we would prefer they didn't do also.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Having no other items or agendas before the committee for today, then we will be adjourned. Thank you very much.